Go ahead and open the public hearing on House Bill 3330 relating to youth programs. And we're pleased to have Representative Knope here today with us. And if you'd like to come on up and staff, would you have anything in opening comments?
Sure. 3330 requires outdoor youth programs to be licensed by the State Office of Services for Children and Families. Defines an outdoor youth program to include programs that provide services to children with behavioral, mental health, and alcohol and drug abuse problems. And establishes a 5-member outdoor youth program advisory board to advise on implementing of the new licensing requirements. Requires the board members to be appointed by the governor, subject to Senate confirmation. And requires the outdoor program to post a bond of $50,000 or 50% of the annual budget, whichever is less, as a condition of licensure. Requires report from SCF and the board to the emergency board and 72nd legislature.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, I rise to a point of order.
Yes, Representative Butler.
Representative Hill has found time to get a haircut. And that is totally unheard of during the last few weeks before Sonny died.
It's obvious and he's not had enough to do.
There is something amiss in the building. I'm not sure what it is, but I think that we need to get to the bottom of it and see if I can get the drift of how to get this done.
Okay. Excellent points this morning. And I, since I need a haircut, I need to talk to Representative Hill afterwards and see how he managed to have time to do that. Good morning, Representative Hill. Nice to have you both here.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just for the record, I did swap the toupee.
Oh,
for the shorter one. So.
Okay. Which one of you would like to go first?
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Tim Knope, State Representative, District 54. Unfortunately, this morning, we're probably not going to be talking to the folks that we need to talk to because you guys are probably pretty well informed on what 3330 does. Since, Madam Chair, many of these programs are located in and around the area that you and I represent, and many of them take place in the territory that the good representative from Ontario represents. But just for the record, I want to go through three or four things that this bill actually does and a couple that it does not do. This bill is designed to add new safeguards to the current system where there almost are none. Hundreds of children enroll in what are called wilderness or therapy programs, and they essentially, these programs have no oversight. This bill would add another item to the menu of services to children and families to be responsible for overseeing, and we give them a little money to do that. These folks are the experts in state government about what children need and how they are to be protected, and so I think they are the best people to oversee this program. This bill also creates a special advisory board made up of experts from industry, public lands to provide checks and balances for the new regulatory program that we have included in this bill, and it requires all those parties to report back either to the e-board or to the legislature in the next session to tell us what improvements need to be made and how how things are operating. And really this bill stems from several incidents out in Eastern Oregon and the death of a child in one of these programs, and probably Representative Hill could speak to that. I know he was contacted by one of the mothers who sent her child to the program, and the son ultimately ended up dying while the program was taking place out in Eastern Oregon, and that was a tragic event. We would like to avoid further tragedy in this regard. A couple of things this bill does not do. It doesn't regulate Boy Scout or church camps or city park and rec programs or the Oregon Youth Conservation Corps or any government program like the OIA. And it does not seek to shut down the existing programs, only to hold them accountable and make certain that they abide by health and safety standards. And I think this is a critical element because we are not looking to wipe out this industry, but there are good players and there are bad players. We want to make sure the good players are protected and that the bad players, in fact, do go away or clean up their act.
Was there any discussion in the committees about our Youth Challenge Program in Central Oregon that not also would not be regulated?
There was, and so we believe that amendments that have been added to the bill in the substantive committee make sure that they are not brought up into this bill.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Madam Chair,
Jane Butler?
The issue of the good player versus the bad player, I assume we're going to appropriate enough money to go ahead and sew an S on the T-shirts of the good players. Is that what we're going to do? So that we'll know the good guys from the bad guys, and put white hats on the good guys.
To the good representative, we believe that as a matter of fact, many of the good players have been involved in this process of this bill and see the need for it. And one of the things that happens is that you have to apply for and obtain a license in order to go out into the wilderness, and there are certain standards you're going to have to meet, and many of those will be implemented by rule. And so by December 1st, SCF is supposed to come up with the rules for this particular program, and people can start applying for their licenses. And I think the good players not only want this, but are welcoming it, and in fact have been involved in trying to bring this bill to fruition.
Chair, I assume that the bulk of the fiscal then relates to the SCF setting up the overall program, goes through the rulemaking authority. Is that what this is?
Madam Chair and Representative Butler, yes, in fact, I believe that is the case. I'd say the fiscal is probably a little high, but I wouldn't quibble with it. You may wish to leave some of the money unscheduled, but that's certainly a decision that's up to you folks on the Ways and Means Sub.
Okay, and then there would be ongoing licensure, is that right?
There would be. And currently, I believe the bill does not provide for a fee at the request of SCF, but that's one of the things I think that we need to come back and look at. Certainly the folks who were going to be licensed were willing to pay a fee. SCF indicated that they don't charge a fee for any of their other programs in regards to this, but I think this program is quite a bit different, and the players are quite a bit different, and there's a lot of money transacted in these programs. They are not mom-and-pop daycare programs. They're, you know, for instance, the mother whose son unfortunately was killed in one of these programs paid about $24,000 to send her son there, and I believe she's still paying off that loan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to make sure what the fiscal included.
You may have answered this already, but I see they have to post a $50,000 bond, but is there a charge for the license itself, or was that the
case? Madam Chair, no, there is not, and that's one of the things that we want to come back either to E-Board or to the legislature and discuss whether or not that's working well. The folks who are involved in this process are not opposed to a fee, but at the time we had the discussions about the bill, SCF indicated that they didn't think there was a need for one. There's likely only between a half dozen and a dozen of these schools that will likely register in the first biennium. And so, you know, depending on how high you set the fee, obviously it's not going to cover the cost. But I think they were willing to pay some sort of a fee, and I think that's probably a discussion that can be had once we get the rules in place and see how things are working.
Just questions regarding the bond. Obviously, there's been some testimony regarding those programs that are interested in making sure that they can continue. My understanding is, as a result of some of the difficulties that they have in non-licensure of these programs, that these programs on federal and public lands, are they continuing on right now?
To my knowledge, Madam Chair and Representative Butler, that many of them are. I believe some of them have had I think one of the bad players, at least for a while, had their license or their permit, I should say, suspended.
They've been on public lands.
Yeah, there's obviously different public lands. There's BLM, there's forest land, and then of course there's state land, and I think the rules are different for each.
Two questions on the bond. What is the intent of the bond? Has the insurance industry or other surety company been contacted so that we know what the intent of the bond is? And number two, those folks who may have action, paragraph 3 under section 6 talks about an action may be brought in any person aggrieved by misconduct. When is the bond subject to pay off? Is it just upon finding of a court, I assume?
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, one of the things that we wanted to do was to basically make the bill a framework and allow the detail of such to be filled in by rule. And so it really is part of the legislative record. Our intent was is that the administrative rules would address the type of bond, whether it be a cash deposit or a surety, and in what circumstances that bond would pay off. For instance, if you had a parent who was disgruntled about the service and had paid several thousand dollars and wanted their money back, would that be an issue, or would it be if there's a finding by SCF that there was something lacking in the camp, would that be? We've really felt like it would be best to leave that to administrative rule and SCF, who knows exactly what these children's programs need in terms of health and safety, and when that bond should be available to be collected by an individual, a parent, or another group.
So that would be determined in the rule. I guess the preamble for Section 6 is, in addition to any requirements for the licensure established by the department at that point, then they would provide that bond in the amount of $50,000, and that bond could be a cash bond at this point, is my understanding.
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, I believe that's correct.
Thank you.
Well, we are a substantive committee to review the fiscal committee to review the fiscal issues, but the substantive issues obviously are very concerning to us, and I know we had a big town hall meeting in Brothers for this elderly couple whose automobile and money was taken at knife point, which totally scared them to death since they're 76 miles from the nearest human being, and having them to be able to recover, obviously, their fear for their safety was certainly something that was obvious to the people at the meeting, that they don't feel like they'll ever be secure in their surroundings again. Any further questions of Representative Canope? Good morning, Representative Hill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Representative Jim Hill, House District 5. My participation in this bill, I introduced another piece of legislation. I had a pre-session drafted. Just when I read the articles and learning that we had no regulation in this area. There were no safety requirements. There were no requirements that anybody participating in any of these programs have any medical training, and there was no recourse for anyone. And then during this legislative session, the mother of the child contacted me that had died, and come to my finding out that she's actually from Hillsborough. So my interest speaks, and so I worked with Representative Canope and Representative Westland, because they were working on legislation themselves on this area. And what I'd like to see, and I think this bill crafts the framework for it, is that we put a framework together to assure parents that they can go back and see that someone has some criteria, that there are some basic requirements that the mother expected some level of plan in terms of it, because no parent should expect paying $24,000. This was voluntary. The child wanted to go to the program because the child felt this would help him. And then to find get a call that says, oh, by the way, we choked your son to death out in the wilderness. She's completely distraught. Naturally over the event, and her concern is to make sure this doesn't occur to anyone else. And I think this bill is a measure that goes forward in that, and the history of these programs are that when regulations come into this state, they leave. The bad players will leave. And unfortunately, we can't stop them when they flee to some other state and set up shop. There were circumstances in Utah in terms of where there were problems and programs, and they were then arrived in Oregon, and the problems continued. And so, and hopefully the bad players will leave. The good players were involved in this in terms of crafting a framework for regulations so that parents, when they're interested in seeking these types of programs to try to address behavioral problems with their children, that they can have some measure to understand what the programs are involved, and that they understand that it's a measure of safety. and there's some standards that they follow. And so I think this is a good framework and balances out the need for regulation and the need for the private sector to provide a series of programs which some people find valuable.
Thank you, Mr. Hill. For the questions?
We have A5 amendments. I wonder if maybe we could have the proponent, speak to the A5 amendments.
Madam Chair and Representative Butler, I think we'd be happy to do that, and we'd probably defer to Don Phillips, who's been working on the Dash 5s, and she can come up and give you a detailed example of what those Dash 5 amendments are.
Thank you, Representative. Good morning, Chair. Good morning, Senator and Representative. Don Phillips, for the record, Legislative Assistant to Representatives Westland and Hill. I believe the good representative from Ben has already covered one section of the Dash 5s dealing with the bonding. And the part that I think is most important in these amendments is on page 3, section 7. And what we did here was respond to a concern from the agency and from the industry about the timeline that we're under. And this is kind of a brave new world for everyone. We haven't done this type of regulation before in Oregon, in SCF, and the industry hasn't been subject to it here. And although we want to go forward and we want to make sure that we get something done and accomplished as fast as we can, we understand the transition period here. So we asked the agency to come up with rules by the 1st of December, but in the amendments we gave a little more transition time for the providers to come in, get their application in as soon as they can in December, if at all possible, after the rules are done, get that application in the pipeline, and hopefully get it approved by the 1st of January.
Excuse me, Don. Representative Johnson.
I want to make sure that I understood you. You're asking for the promulgation of rules by December, the 1st of December.
Right.
But that applicants can come in and solicit the application prior to that. How will they know what the application looks like absent the rules?
No, I'm sorry, Representative Chair Butler and Representative Johnson, they can come in right after the rules have been finished in December, if they like.
Here's my next concern. Having run a state agency that promulgated rules, I know that one of the criticisms often that's leveled against agencies writing rules is that there's not ample time for public input. It seems to me that given what is admittedly by you a very short timeline, I'm concerned that there won't be ample opportunity for all of the affected folks to come in and participate meaningfully in the rule writing. Believe me, I'm not making any excuse for these programs that end up killing kids, and a young fellow was killed from my district at one of these youth camps. So I'm not sympathetic at all to the bad operators. What I am sympathetic to is good process. And I just want to make sure that there's plenty of time to have comprehensive input during rule writing, and I'm not sure 6 months does it.
Mr. Chair and Representative Johnson, we talked about that in the work group meetings that we had in developing the bill with the agency, with the industry folks, and acknowledged that it was a tight timeline, but the agency said they could get it done. They could do the rules. One of the things that I believe enhances what you're getting after as far as the public input is the fact that we do have an advisory board guiding the agency through this rulemaking process that involves members of the public that are going to be most impacted, like the public lands folks. And so you would have enhanced public involvement, if anything, in this process.
Representative Johnson.
I don't dispute the fact that the agency could get the rules done. That's not who I'm concerned about. I'm concerned about the other affected players, particularly the industry. And I know that given a track record that is punctuated with the deaths of some young people, it's hard to be sympathetic to an industry that in some cases has that kind of a spotty record. But I think for rules to have any integrity, to have enough opportunity for there to be input, and particularly I have come to like input that isn't all Salem focused, but that there's an opportunity to go over to Central Oregon or a chance to go to Eastern Oregon, I still am just concerned that 6 months will do it. Now, I'm a newcomer to this process, and I'd be happy to let my good colleague from Ben, who has more experience, and I mean this sincerely, correct me that 6 months would get it done, because I'm sympathetic to the bill. I just would like to make sure that the rules are developed with sufficient time for input.
I can tell that Representative Hill would like very much to have a few more words.
Well, I'd be guided by Representative Hill, too. Yes.
Madam Chair and Representative Johnson, I share your concern. However, in this particular case, I think you have a small number of players. And they're already, I think the good players are already involved in that process. We brought a work group together. We've been working on this bill for 6 months. And there are model rules that are out there from Utah and others that are in the possession of most of the parties who are involved in this. And our concern is that the timeline that we've set out needs to be met, because we don't want to go through one more season of these folks being unlicensed. And if we meet the timeline, which I believe is very possible to do, to get these rules done in a six-month period, that by the time spring rolls around in 2002, that these folks will have gone through the process of being licensed and will be out in the field for the first time with that license in 2002.
Follow-up, Representative Johnson.
The height of the season for these camps, I presume, starts as soon as the weather's decent, so it would start in the spring. So they're operating right now.
I think most of them, yes, are likely operating right now. I think they probably start in, you know, April, May, June, and go on through the, you know, through the summer and fall.
So even given that some of the operators' attention will be turned to running their camps right now, you still are convinced, and you're beginning to convince me, that an expedited rule writing is achievable.
Madam Chair and Representative Johnson, I really truly believe that it is, knowing the players that have been involved in this and the cooperation that's taken place, and SCS willingness to meet with them and have an advisory board advising them on the rules. So far, I have no indication that there won't be anything but cooperation and the opportunity to expedite these rules, and you know, I would suggest that the timeline is achievable. And you know, we are providing them significant amount of money, probably more than what they need based on the fiscal. I think it could be done for less, but I'm willing to, you know, if I was on the sub, I would certainly approve the amount of money in order to make sure that these rules, in fact, do get done in the timeline that we indicate in the bill.
You've convinced me.
Representative Butler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a couple of questions. Number one, you do obviously have a good deal of confidence in those players that have come forward. The supervisory board of six people is made up, half of which are program providers or employees of those outdoor youth programs, plus two members of the general public, and then another member from the Public Lands Coalition, someone that regulates public lands. How many total programs do you think that there might be out there, and how many did you hear from in your standing committee?
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, we heard from about half a dozen programs, and depending on the definition that they're using at the time, and then some of the players that probably are not the best tend to kind of want to change the definition of their programs and try to change the way they operate to get out from under the language, or as the good representative from Hillsborough has suggested, that they'll move on to another state. And while we won't, our intent isn't to force them to be someone else's problem, we do not want them operating in Oregon. And I think that we did hear from probably six programs, and that there may be another three or four that are operating. We heard from the program where this young boy died in their care. And they came to committee, and in fact, we've received some written testimony from them.
I have Representative Hayden, then Representative Johnson.
I don't see anything in the bill that would define really what an outdoor program is. I'm thinking of the Boy Scouts. I'm thinking of church groups that will take kids out for 3 or 4 days. I know that you're looking at the tuition-based week, 2 weeks, month-long program, but is there language in the bill that would not capture the the Pathfinder clubs, the Boy Scout clubs, the overnight church activities?
Madam Chair and Representative Hayden, as a matter of fact, yes, there is. And I think in our dash 3 amendment, are you looking at the A?
I'm looking at the A engrossed, and I have the dash 5.
Okay. I believe in the dash, I believe we put the dash 3s into this bill, and I don't know that I have.
It's,
do you have the A engrossed version?
Yeah. Page 1, lines 18, where it defines an other youth program. Services children who have behavioral problems, mental health problems, or problems with abuse of alcohol or drugs.
That describes my Boy Scout troops.
Are you the leader?
Madam Chair and Representative Hayden, we specifically worked with those stakeholders to make sure, and as a matter of fact, before you came in, Representative Hayden, I indicated that one of the things this bill does not do is not regulate Boy Scout church camps, City Park and Recs, or Oregon Youth Conservation Corps, and they were specifically named as someone who is outside of this bill. What our interest is in regulating those folks who take people, children, out into the wilderness under the guise of therapy and or, you know, alcohol and drug in that situation, and currently don't come under any rules or supervision. I believe many of the those established things that you talked about, Boy Scouts and such, already do come under some sort of regulation. There's essentially zero regulations for the programs that we are trying to get at here.
Follow up.
Well, would you show me the line in the bill that says that? Could you show me the line in the bill that, for example, I mean, this. I'm uncomfortable with the definition on line 18, page 1. Outdoor youth program means a program that provides in an outdoor living setting services to children who have behavioral problems. Name one kid that doesn't. I know what you're looking at, but I don't think you've captured it, because there are lots of outdoor activities who just want to teach rock climbing skills or camping skills, and they're good kids. I mean, their parents don't think they have a problem. But how do you legally differentiate between those two? We're having a rock climbing class this week. Everybody meet at the Coburg Hills, and we're going to climb. And some social worker is going to show up and say, "Where's your license?"
Madam Chair, Representative Hayden,
because this kid has been busted for illegal possession of alcohol.
I think it has to go back to the intent, because otherwise, we're sitting there trying to figure out every program and listing it out. It is not the intent to do those, and these are specific programs, and we worked to get that definition such that it would be a definition that would apply to these types of programs. It wouldn't apply to the Boy Scouts. The Boy Scouts, the program isn't for behavioral problems, mental health problems, or problems of abuse of alcohol or drugs. That doesn't mean that an individual who participates in one of those might fit in that, in one of those definitions, but the program itself is not geared to deliver services geared towards those problems. And so it's a very narrow definition, and it would not encompass, in terms of a church program or Boy Scouts or other programs, which, you know, do not aren't focused on those purposes.
Well, that's all well and good. That's our intent as we sit here, and somebody later on could conceivably go back and listen to the tape and say, well, that wasn't Jim Hill's intent at that point in time. And I agree that the line that says behavioral problems, mental health problems, and problems with abuse of alcohol or drugs focuses pretty tightly, but an outdoor youth program is a very wide net, and you don't want to limit the term outdoor youth program to these troubled children. There are many outdoor youth programs that would not want to be so labeled.
Madam Chair, Representative Hayden, outdoor youth program is being defined as the sentence afterwards.
Poorly.
And I appreciate that, Representative, that you might think that it is poorly written, and I'd be more than happy if you have a suggestion as to do it.
A therapy program.
discuss that at some point.
Representative Hill.
Madam Chair, if you could.
I need to have them sign up on the public hearing. And while you're at it, if anyone else here who wants to testify, be sure and sign up on the sign-up sheet. And if you will sit down and introduce yourself for the record. Thank you.
Just let me say this. What I'm looking for here is words that say this, we're not after instructional programs or recreational programs, we're after therapy programs, therapy-based programs.
I'm Dr. Robert Cooley. I'm the founder and director of one of the wilderness programs. I'm also a psychologist, licensed psychologist in the state. It's the Captain Fear program that I operate. The problem is we worked in committee, or our work group, not a committee, on this language was that some programs claim that they're not doing therapy, they're just schools. Or what is a common problem in this general area that if you call yourself a school, then, I mean, we have a program operating over in the Bend area that's licensed as a school by the state of Oregon, and unfortunately those regulations don't really speak to either what it does nor provide the kind of safety with that program that the child died in that you want to have. So I quite agree with what you're saying. A better word might be treatment if you're going to go for it than therapy. It's hard for me to judge whether that really, you know, I don't know if that's better or worse, because whether the risk of losing jurisdiction over some programs there, if you include a word like treatment, might outweigh the other risks. One thing that's going to happen here is that these regulations are coming back to the e-board in early December when the advisory group and SCF have finished working on them specifically so that this kind of issue can be addressed. We had a specific exclusion for the youth corps because they do work with more problem kids, specifically with them. They don't do treatment as such, but this fellow that runs that was concerned about that. So,
thank you. I'm going to put a finer point on my colleague's question. There are some programs that I'm aware of that focus specifically on self-esteem, WOPES courses. The Outward Bound program, while you wouldn't consider it a traditional therapeutic program, and Outward Bound has a long history internationally, I'm curious where those fall into this. Not so much the Outward Bound sanctioned, but the Outward Bound-like programs that are not particularly pointed at treating kids with drug or alcohol problems, although that could be in the aftermath of a drug or alcohol problem, where they're specifically focused on restoring self-esteem and self-reliance. How do those fit in the scope of this bill or the definition that you're struggling with right now?
Madam Chair, Representative Johnson, some of those definitional things, we tried not to put too much specific language into the bill because then you, and that creates its own set of problems. Certainly, it's not the intent of this bill to deal with that kind of thing. One of the things I assume that we'll do in regulations is say that programs that operate for less than 10 days at a time would not be regulated, which would take care of. I agree the ropes course could be a problem because those are often done with delinquent kids or other things, but those are brief programs. My assumption would be that if you're taking kids out in the wilderness for 10 days or more at a time to work on self-esteem, probably you should be licensed. But if you're just doing a 1 or 2 day weekend ropes course, that's a different matter. The intent here certainly is to get at wilderness programs that are doing longer treatment. The problem is being out in the
Johnson.
I just want to make sure that I understand this. None of these kids are adjudicated. Are some of them adjudicated?
Madam Chair, Representative Johnson, some of them might be adjudicated. My program, for example, takes about a dozen OIA on SCF children a year. We do it at cost as a public service out in the woods. They aren't generally specifically ordered into our program, but they may be under the management of OIA. But it's not, these programs are not primarily for those children.
They are or are not?
They are not.
Under the management of OIA?
Some of them may be. We have at least a dozen or so a year that are. And occasionally we get another child or whatever. Most of our children are paid for by health insurance. The other programs are primarily the parents pay for them.
Just one follow-up to that, and this is probably directed to Representative Canope. In the process of defining the youth that are involved in these outdoor setting programs, there's been a lot of smithing, I take it, that's gone into that. So this issue of therapy-based, treatment-oriented kinds of outcome programs, that's already been smithed through in this process. And you obviously worried that through to the point where it's got some difficulties. But these are these are youth that are not mandated to these programs. The parents may select the programs for the youth to go out and learn how to do survival and how to depend upon their fellow men and so forth. And so we started to monkey around with the definition of therapy-based or treatment-oriented programs. We'd be dabbling in an area that you've already gone to.
Madam Chair and Representative Butler, the good Representative Hayden brought up a very good point that we spent many hours trying to wordsmith, and one of the problems that we came to is that if you define it further, many of the programs and the bad players will simply change the name of what they do and get off scot-free. And our goal is not to merely license the good players who we don't have problems with. It's to make sure that the bad players come under the definition of the bill in order so that we may either improve them or put them out of business or move them out of the state. And I shared the concern, and we looked at this long and hard about what definitions we could use. The Boy Scouts and the Girl Scouts do have representation in the building, although it may be pro bono. I don't believe that people will be here to testify in opposition to this bill because they realize that they are not brought into this. And if I believe that some church camp was brought into this, we would make sure that, in fact, that they weren't. I don't believe that they are. Certainly not the intent that they would be. I think this language would exclude nearly every church camp and outdoor program that I can think of, including the Boys and the Girls Clubs. So those folks will not come under this particular bill. And I am confident that SCF is not looking to expand their authority beyond what we've intended for them to do.
Well, it's obvious you have had extensive hearings on this issue and put a lot of work into that besides the meetings that you had prior to coming before the legislature. So I think you've obviously created a legislative record all about this building and probably will soon you will on the House floor as well as the Senate floor. Any further questions?
Yes.
Representative
Hayden? Oh, I'm
excuse
sorry.
Me. And then Representative Butler.
Well, I have some familiarity, Doctor, with such programs. I'm a sponsor of Project Patch in Idaho.
Good.
I'm closely identified with the outdoor programs of Big Lake Youth Camp, which runs a very extensive summer camp with lots of expeditions away from the camp, and I'm afraid of those being captured, the mountain climbing trips, the rock climbing trips, the biking trips. They may well already be licensed and registered as a national summer camp. Over the Memorial Day weekend, I personally accompanied a dozen other adults to take a dozen children to the Ochocos for three days to dig thunder eggs. Now, some of those kids were troubled, and that's the reason we had them out there. But we weren't a licensed group, nor would we want a social worker if we had to go through the hassle of having a social worker and going through a state agency, the program wouldn't exist. It would go away. And I'm afraid there might be dozens and hundreds of other small programs like that that would just cease to exist, disenfranchising thousands of children from this outdoor experience if a bill with such a wide definition as this. Because the way government works and the bureaucratic mentality is, the bureaucrats will say, it's the law. I'm really sorry, but I have to identify. I have to do this. I have to sit down and meet with your counselors. I have to talk to your kids. I have to do reams of paperwork. And our volunteers are going to say, forget it. Do I make a point?
Representative, Madam Chair, Representative Hayden. Yes, I understand your concern. I've also worked with SDF for years. I think I'm familiar with both the good and some of the not so good sides of the agency. You know, it's perhaps I'm naive, and I certainly don't understand the whole. I mean, I won't pretend to understand the whole legislative, you know, regulatory process. I can assure you that it's not the intent to do that, and that we would try in writing the regulatory language to, by for example, eliminate the programs that were less than 10 or more than 10 days out in the wilderness at a time, so that it wouldn't pick up those programs. I've been helping the state of Idaho write their regulations, and the Project Patch representative was there, and his attitude toward that was he wasn't sure whether he wanted to do this or not, but he agreed that if he were going to do longer trips like this instead of just the weekend and 1 week trips that they have been doing, that probably he should be. His program should be licensed. It should. They haven't got those regulations in place yet in Idaho, but that was the intent there also. That if you run a, we have several schools, therapeutic boarding schools for problem kids in the state of Oregon, and they often do weekend or week-long trips. It's not our intention to require them to be licensed under this either.
Follow-up. Well, project. To take that example, and there must be others, Project Patch is physically based out of state. It's in Idaho, but its administrative offices are in Oregon. Now, does this law apply to out-of-state camps who are headquartered in Oregon? It's just where the children are physically. What if an organization from Iowa wants to take an Oregon trip, they have to get a license to bring their kids here?
Madam Chair and Representative Hayden, if in fact they're operating for a significant length of time, I believe that they would. In many cases, they, on the land that they're going on, sometimes it's private, but these programs that we're specifically looking at tend to use public land, either a BLM situation, state-owned, or national forest. And that's one of the ways we've been able to recognize how many programs that we're trying to look at and, in fact, regulate. And, one of the reasons we didn't specify that particular issue in the bill is because we were afraid that they would just try to find private land that they could go on and thereby avoid regulation. So I certainly share your concern. I think that we have covered that in our definition and in the rules process. I think you're going to find probably three expected parents, Representative Westland, myself, and Representative Hill, watching over the birth of these particular regulations and rules to make sure that they are adequate for what we need, yet not onerous on those folks who we would, I think, all recognize are players who are operating within the law and taking good care of children. Unfortunately, this particular bill stems from some very bad experiences, most of which happened in Eastern Oregon, and that we don't want to happen again. We don't need the publicity, and these children certainly don't need to be in jeopardy. And we want to correct this problem, and we believe that this bill is, in fact, the best way that we've been able to come up with to do that.
Madam, Madam Chair, I remain unconvinced that although there have been some tragedies, and we wish that they had not happened, my fear is that, one, either some children will be denied the opportunity to go on these trips because of the bureaucratic regulations, or small groups that don't have the expertise to engage in filling out the forms and doing all the paperwork that the state would require will just not participate. I can see the problem, but I believe that the cure is worse than the disease.
Representative Butler, did you have a comment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I can feel, and I'm involved in some youth programs, mostly student scouting programs, but I also, with five youngsters, would express, I guess, my concerns with Representative Hayden, but also my confidence that if we get some of these providers of the programs together with those folks from the regulated public lands, that the definitions and rules could provide for those programs that are basically parent-child related or Sunday school class arranged kinds of deals or pay fee-for-service. I think the kinds of programs that you're talking about are not necessarily pay fee-for-service, and what happens on those programs is that when you take those youngsters out, you each have your own liability, and if you happen to abuse or mistreat a child in that process, or even if you don't, and they're somehow damaged in your automobile coming or going, your own insurance would provide for that. I guess I'd have to express my confidence that the Outdoor Youth Program Advisory Board could come up with some kind of a definition which would accommodate those parent-child or foster-child relationships and or those programs that are fee-for-service kinds of programs because that's the ones that you're after the fee-for-service program where the mom goes and borrows $24,000 or invest $24,000 to anticipate a rehabilitated youngster coming out of the program.
Representative Johnson?
This is just for my edification because I don't know very much about these programs. In the instances where adjudicated youth are being sent to a program, those are unlicensed programs that the state is now sending an adjudicated child to?
I think I'd let the programs speak for themselves, but in fact, if they're currently sending them to any of these wilderness-type schools, in fact, I know of no license that they need to have in order to operate. Now, they may have gone through a process with OYA to be vetted in that way, but for the kids who are not in OYA custody or adjudicated in that way, I know of no license which they have to have other than a permit if they're going to operate on public land in Oregon, and that has been the problem. There is virtually zero oversight, and we have kids who are being sent out on, you know, multiple week trips with folks, and, you know, of course, it's the food and it's the living conditions and it's all those things. And, you know, parents have a confidence level of some of these programs, and they should probably at this point not have that confidence level, mainly because of some of the experiences that have happened in the past.
Yes, Dave Hill, you wanted to respond.
Madam Chair, Representative Johnson, I know of no adjudicated children being ordered by the court into these programs. I think the gentleman, his testimony was that he offers this stuff as a public service to encourage them to come in. He said it's six, half a dozen or so. The programs that the court is sending adjudicated children to are licensed by the State Office of Service and Children. They're already licensed. Those treatment facilities are licensed, and that's under a different scheme of regulation, and then they're exclusive. expressly excluded from these programs, this regulation.
Thank you. I just needed that level of comfort. A follow-up, Madam Chair?
Representative Johnson.
When you had spoken about, just a moment ago, food and living conditions, I'm presuming that on page 2, line 14, where you say requirements for health and safety, that would be where you'd be sweeping those sorts of concerns in. Drawing on one of Representative Hayden's questions, would a camp, for example, be then propelled, if they were taking care of, let's say, 16 kids, into having to have a commercial kitchen, or will there be ancillary requirements from other agencies that might put prohibitive costs on any of these folks?
Madam Chair, Representative Johnson, I don't think they're looking to put prohibitive regulations on it, but it's to ensure that if you're going out, that they have proper training in terms of how to dig a latrine, making sure that there's proper toiletry training. It's talking about safety and food. I think the testimony of the mother, because she received a letter from her child 2 days after she was notified that he was dead. And in the letter, the child was begging to come home because they weren't feeding him. They'd take his shoes away from him. She had read the letter, and I mean, it was, you know, tragic. And so she just, like, you know, so she has to live now with that, where she encouraged this child to go to this program, where she said she did all the research, she looked at the website, she talked to people, she called parents, so it wasn't just sort of an uneducated thing. She spent $24,000 to send this child to this program, and, you know, he was essentially choked to death out in the wilderness, you know, and they had no plan for safety. They had no, they weren't trained in safety, to my understanding, in terms of how to treat CPR, and they didn't have, you know, communication devices in terms of trying to bring emergency services in. They were in the wilderness, and
I guess the distinction I'm making is, as I've been listening to Representative Hayden, they're holding themselves out as being a commercial enterprise. They have a website. They have advertisements. They are doing things at a price level that is suggestive that this is a highly remunerative and lucrative enterprise. The distinction I think that Representative Hayden is drawing is when you get some parents together or some kids who might have had a little scrape with an MIP, and I don't mean to minimize underage drinking, but the difference between an enterprise that holds itself out for commercial for profit versus well-meaning parents who want to take kids out and show them there's a better way than sitting around drinking beer underage. You very convincingly made the differentiation to me. Also, knowing that you, both of you, and Representative Wesson will be leaning over the rule writing process, making sure that it's clear and appropriate, brings me a great deal of comfort.
Before you respond, Representative Johnson, Representative Knope, I need you for another bill that we're holding up another committee for. Could you meet me out in the hall? And then what I'd like to do is have the committee, Mr. Hill, Representative Hill, if you could continue to respond to the committee, and then I would like to have a short recess where you, Representative Knope, Representative Hayden can meet and pull Representative Westland out next door. So we'll continue for a few minutes, and if I can meet you outside.
Representative Johnson, Mr. Chair, I think that's the distinction here. It is certainly not the intention to pull in the programs Representative Hayden is talking about, and I understand his concern, but I think in terms of we've worked with this, and the agency has already rules already adopted in terms of explicitly exclude like the Boy Scouts and these other programs from other types of regulation. So there is a history in terms of within the agency that they're not going to do it. But I think in terms of the issue is, in this, if we put too many words in this definition, then the bad operators will say, well, I'm a this program, and so therefore it doesn't fit within the definition. And that's the reason why it is broad, and we're looking to rule to narrow it and to understand it so that you don't have sort of a mercurial definition where somebody just jumps over and says, well, I'm now this type of program, you know, because this program that choked this child to death out in the wilderness changed its name, has a new website, You know, and so now they're operating as a different entity now.
One follow-up, Representative Johnson and Representative.
I'm sorry all of the Central Oregon folks left, but do either one of you, does the name J-Bar J ring any bells? That would not be included in this, would it?
Mr. Chair and Representative Johnson, no, it would not, because it is a state licensed facility under other rules already, and it does have a contract with OIA, so it's covered, excluded from this bill and covered under other regulatory schemes already.
Thank you. I'm sorry to make this so parochial, but
that's page 24 and 25,
right.
Other licensed by state. Representative Hayden?
Well, I gave you the example of over the Memorial Day weekend of a bunch of parents, including myself. Parents, not all parents, parents and neighbors and church members, and just a polyglot group of people took a bunch of kids to the woods for 3 days, swimming and fishing and digging for thunder eggs. And it's frankly very dangerous. A kid could get lost. A kid could fall over a cliff. They're not likely to get choked or strangled by a group like that, but...
Even though you'd like them sometimes.
Last summer, we took a similar group into the wilderness on horses for a 3 or 4 day camp trip. It's very dangerous. We know that a child could get killed at any time. It could happen, and we pray every day that it won't happen. But if you start regulating these in the name of safety, they're not going to happen.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I don't think those types of programs fall under this in terms of, and if that... I think that would be an abuse, but I don't know how to write a definition that would exclude people helping people. We are here looking at trying to go after a commercial entity that holds itself out and takes children out in the wilderness. It's a program.
So that I understand for the record, Representative Hill, the Outdoor Youth Program Advisory Board would be responsible to identify those kinds of programs. And I think what we're hearing from Representative Hayden is you have a high parent or adult to youth ratio in the programs, and they're non-remunerative, they're unpaid. And there's not a fee for service in that process. And I'm going to guess that in that process, the Outdoor Advisory Board would be able to address that. I would like to have Judy tell us, if you would, please, Judy, the fiscal that you've got here. Is that mostly in the current biennium? That's mostly for the rule writing, is that what that is?
That is for the rule writing and for the initial setup and licensure. Part of the licensing process will include a fiscal inspection of the facilities.
Okay. They're expected to have a physical facility.
If they're not. You know, if they are going to go out to Bachelor Black Butte,
based upon the rules,
they
would be right at that point.
Right.
Okay. Representative Hayden?
Yeah. What would that be? A storage locker where they keep their gear?
But it may be a list of what gear they will look into the program itself.
Another question for Representative Hill.
Please,
Representative Hill. You've gone to, and I appreciate what you did. You're just the bad news bear. That's all. I'm not mad at the bear. I'm mad at the bad news. You say you want to write these loosely enough that you can capture any organization you feel needs to be captured, but you do not want to capture those that you do not feel need to want to be captured. But you're familiar with the concept of CYA. Now, you give these regulations to a bureaucrat, and they're going to say, oh, my, what organizations do I need to capture? Do I have the license to let that one go? I think not, because if anything bad happens there, my job's on the line. I will be disciplined. So the tendency for the bureaucrat reading these rules is going to be to include everybody, because that's the safe thing for them personally to do.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hayden, I guess I would. The agency was involved in the discussions. I look to the rules that they already have existing in other programs, in terms of where they've addressed these very same concerns. And so, in terms of, I think they're going to be responsive to the legislature and the intent under the legislation. But it's unless we start listing out huge long lists of this type of program or that type of program in statute, I can't sit here and tell you that there's going to be any definitive yes or no. But I mean, I have to look at the track record on the agency in terms of how they've written the rules in similar programs and similar types of regulatory schemes, and they have been very conservative and they've been very diligent in terms of doing that. They have excluded these types of programs. They're not under regulation today under other schemes. But this is specifically to try to address a growing niche of entities out there that are purporting to deliver services with some result for treatment for these behavioral problems, and they're very expensive. Parents are looking for answers in terms of because they care about their children, and I think in terms of there has been an issue here with children being killed on these programs, not because they slipped off a cliff, not because the horse took off and it was a tragic accident. I mean, this was because someone was not trained, they used the wrong types of restraint, and they choked the kid to death out in the woods. And so, I mean, and that's the type of regulation where I'm looking for limited in terms of making sure someone, if you're going to be using restraint in a program like this, that someone is trained. They know how to do it, and they're responsible for it, that they've got basic things, that if you're sending someone out in the wilderness with children, someone is responsible enough that they are trained in CPR, they're trained in first aid, they have an emergency plan to say, how do I get this child off this mountain in a time period, if something, an accident or something tragic occurs. And what has occurred in the past shows that those types of plans were not in place and did not exist, and the result is that a child died needlessly. And so that's where I'm trying to go.
Go ahead and at the request of Chair Senator Quarnell, we'll go ahead and stand at ease for about 5 minutes, 8 minutes.